You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 19 September. We had Japanese inflation data for August out a few hours ago, 2.7% versus 3.1% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. A quick programming note, immediately after the show's ending, I am heading off to the beach and I will be back Monday week. Dudu will stand in next week. On the show today, Skulklo, PSG Old Oak, Pick and Pay, some of the parts. Does it make it free or does it make it a trap? And then Remgro. Skulk and I talked on the show about Remgro a long time ago. He likes it. Discount store wide. Let's dig around a bit. Rehan Olivier from Fovis Mazars. SARS release of their draft crypto asset reporting framework regulations. Let's dig into that. And then thoughts for me on how to spread the word of investing and better money management to your friends and family. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. SA capturing a larger share of diverted Red Sea marine traffic. Thousands of vessels are being diverted from the Suez Canal around the Cape, and some are stopping off. Business Day, Reserve Bank opts for caution in keeping repo rate at 7%. Governor points to new trade tariffs, global uncertainty, and subdued local economy. He's not wrong, but wow, 10.5 prime, that's hurting. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.5%, NASDAQ a full percent higher. The 10-year is slipping a bit, 4.112%. The East is all green. Sydney up a little, 0.25%. Tokyo, 0.75% higher. Hong Kong, just 0.1% up, and 10 cent, 0.25%. Commodities mixed. On the red side, we got gold futures. Futures 3,687 and Brent 67.37. On the red side, platinum 1,400 and palladium unchanged 1,188. The rand 17.36, Bitcoin 117,000. Top 40 opening call, green open 280 points or almost 0.33% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Skulklo, PSG Old Oak. Skulk, always appreciate the early morning. So I've been doing some basic math on Pick and Pay. They own 65.6% of Boxer. That's worth about 20 billion. They've got some couple of billion of cash. They've got an assessed tax loss of about 2 billion. All in all, that's nicely above a 20 billion valuation for Pick and Pay. But it trades just over 19 billion. Are we getting Pick and Pay for free? Is this value or is this a trap?
Can I tell you in a year or two? Yeah, that's. I think the best case study for me usually when I hear these type of things is Able or African Bank back in the days where they bought a dripping rose called Ellerines. Mm. I just have a 9 billion rand. I mean, they did the sum of the parts, was for free. Eventually, this company made a lot of losses and basically cost the company its existence back then, or let's call it the version one existence. Mm-hmm. Yes, Pick and Pay is a great company. I must say there's a few things in the investment case for me. I mean, you can see that Pick and Pay clothing is picking up. The online side is really looking good. And as you mentioned, the Boxer separate listing or IPO was an extremely – they need to be complimented. This was a great – great value unlocking for Pick and Pay. But now the work starts. You know, when they went into this and they appointed Sean Summers again, he mentioned, he said, this is not going to be a one-day game.
Yeah.
This is going to – we're going to look at least financial year end 2027. And we know what they may release. He actually – when they actually turn around and say, well, Pick and Pay, the stores itself, we're not talking about group, the Pick and Pay stores, is still making losses of 500 million rand for this period. So, and we don't foresee this changing now until 2028. So the risk – I mean, this is why we see the company trade pretty much at Boxer's valuation, because the risk buying Pick n Pay for Boxer is that we see a downturn in the economy or things really just go bad. And now suddenly those 500 million losses get extended beyond 2028. And then we look at things again like rights issues and those type of things. So again, I think for the listeners out there, yes, it's looking good. It's looking better. But don't think this is sort of a no-brainer. There's definitely some risk attached by buying Pick n Pay for Boxer. If you want Boxer, go and buy Boxer. I mean, it's like with the Woolies. This is like the Woolies theories. People telling me when you look at Woolies trading at 53 odd rand. I mean, just the food business is worth 54 rand. But just remember, you still have the rest, and the rest is struggling. But anyway, it's looking better. I mean, let's celebrate the small little victories for Sean Summers, but they're definitely not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, but I take your point. They're not out of the woods. And to be clear, that woods could get darker and rainier. Yeah. That's certainly possible. Let's touch on Remgro. You and I first spoke about it maybe a year or more ago, and then particularly focusing on the discount to its sum of the parts. And more recently, we were on a TV show together, and you picked it as one of your picks. It's a stock you still like, and that discount is still there. You're getting some nice assets, and you are really buying them at discount, because in many cases we can see through in the pricing because those assets are listed or were recently listed in the case of Mediclinic.
Yes, correct. They're doing exciting things, and this is, I mean, sort of one of the negatives that I've seen for Remgro over the past, let's call it, decade. Mm-hmm. This is a company that's been trading, and I've looked at the 15-year average discount to its intrinsic value, trading at around about a 20% discount to its net intrinsic value. Currently, as we sit here, it's trading just over 38%, still trading at a 38% discount to its net intrinsic value. And this is one of those companies when younger investors or investors come to me and say, well, I don't want to buy three or four different companies with the money that I currently got. What company would you recommend? Well, I usually ask, do you use Mediclinic? Do you like them? Yes. Do you use or like OUTsurance? Yes. Heineken, First Rand, Discovery. I mean, this is a great portfolio of company. I mean, 27% of the companies is made up of Mediclinic, OUTsurance, 24%. Great, great company with great companies inside. I love the discount. They're still sitting with cash just over, well, just close to 7.5 billion rand in cash. I'm excited to see what they're going to do with that cash. So, yeah, they still got my money for now. I'm definitely going nowhere with my Remgro.
Yeah, and you're basically getting Yannie Durant and his team at a discount. You're employing them to run a portfolio for you, but you're getting a 40% discount, not something that happens every day. We'll leave it there. Skalkalo, PSG Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Vanha Olufied. He's partner and fintech and digital assets lead at Forvis Mazars South Africa. Vanha, appreciate the early morning time. Earlier this week, I think it was Monday, SARS released the draft crypto asset reporting framework. First question, what is the crypto asset reporting framework that they've released in draft form? What are they looking to do and achieve?
Hi, Simon. Morning. Nice chatting to you again. So effectively, what they're trying to achieve with this is to basically source to cast their tax net wider. Mm-hmm. So currently, there's a lot of information that these virtual asset service providers or cryptocurrency exchanges are effectively sitting on. And there's not really real-time engagement with SARS in terms of providing that relevant data to SARS for them to utilize to cast their tax net a little bit wider. So effectively, what this crypto asset reporting framework will effectively do is to align with international standards and effectively result in these crypto asset service providers to providing SARS information on a more granular level, but also in relation to specific information to taxpayers. So it won't be linking up ID numbers or individuals' names. It now actually be linking up taxpayers' information and tax numbers. So effectively, you would have SARS being able to do more diligent audits at the end of the day.
Oh, do we already see this? And I'm thinking my stockbroker, perhaps. I mean, my bank account. I mean, SARS has already got a lot of access at taxpayer number level in a bunch of financial industries.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think that's towards what we're moving to from a cryptocurrency perspective. A lot of individuals in South Africa are still not declaring their taxes. I mean, it's evident based on the fact that I think there's about 500,000 taxpayers declaring their taxes based on Chainalysis analytics that show that about 6 million individuals in South Africa actually own cryptocurrency. So, I mean, there is a lot of under-declaration taking place, and this is not unique to South Africa. It's happening all across the world. We see this particularly in France as well. But at the end of the day, what SARS is trying to do is just make sure that it doesn't happen going forward. So effectively, what will happen, as you mentioned, it will be similar situations to the banks where your IT3B or IT3C, depending on whether you've got capital gains, gains from trading or staking rewards, being actually pulling through on your tax return. But of course, we are still a couple of years away from that, in my view.
This is open for public comment, I think, until early October. But this, I mean, my sense is this shouldn't be controversial. I mean, no one's going to stand up and say, no, I don't want to pay tax. I mean, we all want to reduce tax, but we need to pay it.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, blockchain-based digital assets were designed to operate outside of the constraints of the traditional financial services sector. And there's a lot of individuals that believe it should also fall outside of the tax laws and the various regulations. So unfortunately, there's this mindset of a lot of individuals. And of course, it has gotten significantly better over the last, call it 8 to 10 years in terms of people coming to the realization it's just another asset class and it needs to be treated in terms of the income tax that you actually need to pay your taxes on those relevant gains.
That's okay. Point. I mean, crypto really is no longer a fringe asset class. I mean, 6 million South Africans holding it. This is a it has come of its own, and it we've seen the regulation increasing over time. This is only a good thing for the crypto ecosystem.
100% correct. I mean, you see the likes of large financial institutions actually adopting the asset class. I think Bitcoin sitting under, I think if I'm not mistaken, the top eight assets worldwide by market cap just over $2 trillion. So it's no longer an asset class that's only used by a couple of technology enthusiasts. It's become a mainstream asset class, and I think people need to realize that as well from a tax standpoint.
We're not sure of timelines. As we said, this is draft. It's open for public comment. Is our industry locally ready for this? I mean, if assuming it passes and whatever that timeline is, and there might be a period of sort of phase in, is our industry ready?
So, of course, there's a lot of work that needs to be done by the virtual asset service providers or the crypto asset service providers, as we refer to them from a regulatory standpoint. So the bulk of the work needs to be done on their side. I mean, they've done fairly well in terms of the anti-money laundering and know your client procedures that they need to perform in terms of the Financial Action Task Force. So there has been a lot of steps forward by these crypto asset service providers in South Africa in terms of having the reporting ability. So definitely it's something that they would be able to handle. And I think in terms of timelines, I do anticipate that SARS will try and get this over the line rather quicker than waiting on it because of the fact that they're losing out on a possible revenue stream there. And I mean, the same applies if you think about elements like the South African Reserve Bank and exchange control regulations with the recent court case of the South African Reserve Bank versus Standard Bank. I mean, even from that perspective, there's dire changes to regulations that needs to be made, and we can't have a situation where lawmakers are currently sitting on their hands and not addressing the elephant in the room in relation to asset class, because the asset class is really not going anywhere, and I think that's been proven over recent years.
100%, it absolutely isn't. You mentioned the financial action task force, the folks who put us on the grey list. They've got a plenary meeting. I think it's towards the end of next month where maybe we get off the grey list. Does this link to this, or is it just coincidence that it's coming out now? Because there was a list of some 20 odd tick boxes we had to comply with, and some of those were legislative.
Yeah, so what SARS is rolling out is definitely not specifically relating to the grey listing as well. It's basically just to add on. So, I mean, most crypto asset service providers are adhering to the necessary requirements of the travel rule and all of that things. But this is just for SARS saying, well, okay, if the crypto asset service providers are able to report in a real-time basis on a daily basis to the various authorities, then surely they could be doing that from a tax standpoint as well, and we can get our cut of the pie.
The key point, and yeah, this is, and you mentioned, I mean, we're basically, this is global standards. Of course, this is a new industry, so they kind of been, you know, we can't look to other global markets. In some ways, we're trendsetters, and in the short version is we are there with those global standards. It might be a new asset class, but we're not being left behind as a country and as financial services industry.
Yeah, I think it's important to note this. This is not an asset class tied to a specific jurisdiction. This is an international asset now. So the global assets require global regulations as well. And that means that all of the countries needs to come to the party in terms of how they regulate the asset class as well, because otherwise you get these instances of regulatory arbitrage, what you want to try and avoid, because it creates loopholes in the systems effectively. But I think in terms of the regulating the industry, I mean, there was also a position also released now by the JSE looking to rather providing guidance on how a listed cryptocurrency spot ETF would look in terms of how the custody would look and the various requirements being done. So it's always a step forward, but I do believe South Africa can move a little bit faster if you look at the various other regulations being issued on a global basis as well. I mean, things like the Genius Act, the stablecoin ordinance in Hong Kong, MiCA. So these lawmakers abroad have put in significant efforts to try to regulate the industry. And if you look at it from a US perspective, they're reaping the benefit of that as well, forcing stablecoin issuers to buy those treasury bonds from the United States and effectively strengthening the US dollar. So, I mean, to that extent, that is very innovative. And I hope and I wish that we see that going forward from South African standpoint as well, that they regulate the industry in such a way to protect their stakeholders, but also not just only stifle the innovation, but not stifle the innovation, but also innovate from their side as well.
Yeah, so doing good, but perhaps a little bit more. As you say, there are, I mean, the Genius Act as one of them, and of course part of that is if I get folks to buy their long and short dated bonds. We'll leave it there. Vahan Olufiya, partner and fintech and digital asset lead for Vivus Mazars South Africa. Appreciate the early morning. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts from me on how to sort of spread the word on investing and more than just investing, you know, better money management, crypto, whatever it might be, tax-free accounts. You listen to the show, you probably know a bunch more than the average person. And in many cases, people are like, well, how do I get my friends, my colleagues, my family and the like sort of better? Not trading crypto necessarily, but a tax-free account, a budget, that sort of thing. And in fact, at Leader X last week, I was having a couple of conversations around this. People are saying, how do I get friends and family smarter about money and smarter about investing, smarter about savings for retirement? And here's the thing, you can't if they don't want to. Many of you would have heard the cliche, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And this is kind of the same situation here. So what we need to sort of get into place is rather let it be known that you know stuff. And you know, the one trick someone suggested to me when we were chatting last week, you know, send an article into a family WhatsApp group or maybe a work group or even maybe, you know, one of your faith-based groups, whatever it might be, a stock follower. Just, you know, a simple article on something around tax-free, something around investing. Don't go heavy with crypto and FX. Keep it simple and just drop it in and say, hey, interesting read, some of you might like. And what that does, it won't generate probably a flurry of folks saying, oh, help me with this or what about that or something else. But it just kind of puts it out there that you're someone who, well, if nothing else, has a bit of a source to some knowledge around this, so that one day when someone is wanting to know something more and they are in a position to maybe get a little bit smarter around their investing, their will, their retirement, their money, whatever it might be, they'll think, what about that chap, that lady? And they will reach out. It's important. They will reach out when they're ready. That's what we need. So you be the expert for when they need an expert. And just let folks know that you're happy, that when they need the expert, you can be that person. That's it for today. A poll yesterday, we were chatting with Vishal Rama from Prescient South Africa. Reserve Bank rate decision was yesterday afternoon. We saw the Fed cut 0.25% loss on Wednesday night, rather. And the question to you all was, will the MPC do the same? Over two-thirds of you said they have to cut. They have to give us 0.25%. A quarter of you said no change, and the rest said we need a raise. Ouch. Some of you did choose violence there. The answer, of course, we now know is there was no change. Prime stayed at 7. Sorry, repo at 7. Prime stayed at 10.5. And it is still tough out there if you have debt. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nubuchle, Nicole Tulani, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again Monday. I'll be at the beach, but Dudu will be standing in.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.